Go ahead, Blueberry.
Good evening, everyone. We're
technical difficulties. We're experiencing technical difficulties.
Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock here on the west coast of the United States, and it's time for the joy of sacrifice. And for the last 20 plus weeks, we've been studying the book, The Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold. Ivan and I have been acting as ambassadors for the book. We are like the preachers who have understood the material enough and have the courage, in a sense, to bring it forth in front of everybody. We are not the material. The fact that we have read it and we make it available to everybody. So I want to thank Ivan for joining me for the last 20 plus weeks. It has inspired me in a way that is just so very helpful, Ivan. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Welcome it is. And then I want to point out also, I always, at the end of the class, after everything's turned off, I always thank Marvette. But she plays a critical role, and it's a discipline. Every single time one of these events occurs, she shows up to do the work of putting the microphones, the phone together, the cameras. There are two cameras. And she records it both in an audio basis and a video basis. And she works diligently to do that. It's as if it's a form of davening, Ivan.
To be bending over the cameras?
Every week she comes and does that particular prayer. And I want to point out one other person that has been of great service to me personally in a manner of support that is not seen in a certain way overtly. And that's Molly Midway. And Jana has come to virtually every class that I've done in the last 3 years. And it's that support and her interest in the material, and she's a sounding board when I'm done to help me clarify ideas. So in a certain way, and I want to thank her, and so thank you, Molly, for that, as always, and for always. And she says, you're welcome. So what we're working with is the basis of a material written by E.A. Gold some 40 years ago now, 35 years ago now, Ivan, in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so 35, 40 years ago, he's conceiving and starting to put this material together. That's the framework that we work from. And so we as individuals, we come forth to present the material. We have a little teeny bit of a different situation than you do in that we've worked here and lived here for many years. But our presentation and the presentation of the material is not complete without the component that is you. And the component of the participants receiving the message is what completes the message. It's in the concept that we've worked with for so many years, and I don't know if I've talked about it much, but in the idea of objective art, a piece of objective art is, you can say it's beautiful or whatever, but unless it is observed almost with the same attention that the artist put into it, it's not complete. The fact that it's a two-dimensional object hanging on a wall is nothing. It's only when we give ourselves to it that it starts to come alive, Ivan. It comes alive because then we can see the message that the artist has given, and in this case, that the author has given. So it's our job to put in the work to get to the level that the message to which, from whence the message came. And in that space, we can then begin to get some of the information. Now, it's not enough to, in a sense, be entertained by this information. Part of the problem that I have with a lot of the New Age gurus out there, and there are many, and I use the word with a small g, is that they're great charisma, even great fanfare, and they'll put something on, and I got like asked, you know, and I actually went to an event with Werner Erhard when he was physically there,
right.
And there's tremendous charisma, and then we're excited, aren't we? We're excited, and our energies are heightened by these individuals, and for some of us, that's enough, right? That's enough.
Yeah.
Oh, I went to this event; it was spiritual, and by goodness. But that's a difference with the work. I have a different approach to it. My approach is that this work is complete when we work with the material. When we are setting up a camera or loading it with film, when we are drinking our tea or crossing our legs, are we actually working with attention at that time when we walk across a room? And if we are, then we're exercising our divine right and the divine right of being in the moments of presence. So we've been through a long road here, and we've been through a long discussion of sacrifice. And it's an unusual discussion in the 21st century, but I'm not done with that discussion, because I think that has to be planted in the ground, the concept of sacrifice. And it has to come about and given a new life. It's not just this is a book that came out 35 years ago or so, and I'm talking about the concept of sacrifice is throughout every society and throughout every age that we can consider. Its form has changed, and it's time for that form to change once again. Time for it to change again, and we have been the vanguards of part of that change. When I started, one of the things that I began with is a discussion of, and you can go back to some of the very early chapters or the early postings on the website called wingsofchaos.com, and you can see the beginnings of a discussion that is literally just the beginnings. And it's a conversation about the nature of sacrifice. Sacrifice in the old days wasn't just the event called, you know, you slaughter the fatted calf for the guest or something like that, or for Juno to be happy that day, or Theseus is supposed to do whoever. The point is that we... That's only the external part of what occurred. We are not dealing with externals here. We're dealing with our internal environment. That's what this is all about. As long as it stays external, it stays safe. And some people say, oh gosh, you know, it's this or that's gone away and that's not there anymore. And I say, well, I'll tell you where to look. I'll tell you where to look. And the idea of sacrifice has to do first with consecrating the object of sacrifice. That was the biggest part of the work when a sacrifice occurred. That's what when they brought the cow in, or they brought the calf in, or the chicken, or the lamb. Or what's the ram is the one I was thinking of. The story of Isaac.
The ram, yeah.
The story of Isaac and his son, and the ram came and took the place of that son. And
it's Abraham and Isaac, isn't it?
Abraham
yeah.
was asked by God to sacrifice your son. and Bob Dylan, of course, has that in the Highway 61 Revisited, and God says to Abraham, kill me a son. Abe says, man, you must be putting me on. God
not
says,
in the Old Testament.
No. But next time I see you coming, you better run. It says, well, where do you want this killing done? Out on Highway 61.
Oh, there you go. that's updated. Actually, that brings to mind, David, your... That's like,
and so let me just
okay,
complete
yeah,
this thought.
Comment,
is that,
yeah.
And so it's the idea of consecration that is the handmaiden of sacrifice. And sacrifice isn't something stopping something. It's actually clearing something away so that you can see something new. Thus the title, The Joy of Sacrifice. Every single one of these sacrifices, read them again, like Aria did. Read them again, and you'll see it's not just, oh, stop eating pork on Thursdays. It's do a sacrifice so that your vision is clear to see something brand new. That's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's the nature of this. And that's where we need to expand, and I think we need to expand this writing. And all of that puffery that that I'm going on about here is just, I want to indicate that we have an obligation to complete this work. These tidbits have been put on the trail for us. These crumbs have been left. But it's until we do our work. On the website, now, the email did not go out. Okay, there was a reason it didn't go out, but it didn't go out. I sent it to just a small number of people. And... because I didn't have everybody's email address. And I encouraged everybody, the purpose of this summary class was for you to go on the website and post what was the most meaningful sacrifice for you. And there were four postings, and several comments. And
mm-hmm.
I was moved by these. If you go and you read those, you will be, hopefully you'll be moved as well. Not only will be moved, but notice that these individuals have sacrificed a certain form of passivity and a certain form of ego to put themselves out and to share something about what their experience has been. Bloody moving information is there. That's the work that we can do for others. It's theoretical, and I say, no, it isn't. Here's a specific example. Here's a specific example of individuals speaking their mind and sharing their experience. And some of these individuals, I know a teeny bit about what they've been through to post what they've posted.
Yeah, I agree. I thoroughly agree with David, and I would just like to emphasize, yeah, to repeat that this is really inspiring what you're posting on there, and I'm really enthusiastic, you know, about reading it. And I'm not even sure that I know everybody who is out there in the circle, the discussion circle, you know, of this book that we've been carrying on now for 20 or 21 weeks or more. And I would really like to read a post from everyone about some aspect of this, you know. And it is, I think, I would have to agree with David, I think that it is a form of the sacrifice of comfort. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, to sit, again, from the teacher's point of view, it's like there are the students who are always sitting in the back of the class, and they may do fine and get a good grade and so on, but they just seem to be soaking it all up, and they don't necessarily participate. And instructors,
well put.
School instructors are always trying to contrive games and puzzles and methods, tricks, classroom tricks to force everybody to get into small groups or to, you know, to have to vocalize or move their bodies around somehow or other.
It's time to raise your hand.
Yeah.
In class.
And I just wanted to say before I lose this other
yeah.
associative thought, when David, you were talking about something like, you know, one of these radical suggestions of yours, you know, that the teaching, that we're reviving something. It's like the radical idea. You know, the radical, etymologically, radical means going back to the roots. It's the, you know, the Latin or Greek root of that is, the word radical actually means foundations, means roots or basics. And it's interesting, the thought that struck me is that this is, you know, EJ said many years ago that we should have a book, you know, if we had a book like Uspensky's In Search of the Miraculous, he wanted somebody to write a book called In Search of the Ordinary, because in this school, in our teaching, what we're looking for is to have the being to be in the other side of the river, is to be in the essence position, you know, to be speaking from essence or moving from the basis of the essential self and somehow carrying out ordinary life, carrying out the behavior and the actions and the atmosphere and so on of ordinary life more or less invisibly. So, which is to say that these sacrifices, the objective prayer, you know, this work of attention and so on goes on. It's not like the evidence of it isn't the kinds of miracles and startling, you know, sensational things that happen. It's a practice that goes on every day, day in and day out, in ordinary life.
That's the incredible mystery, Ivan.
Yeah.
Because we read about stuff in books and we go, oh gosh, service to others.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that sounds so good, service to others. But the reality of it, service to others in a case like this, is making a posting like Aria made, or that Harry made, or that Susan made, or that Simon made. They are of service. They are exercising true service to others at that moment. Those are truly charitable acts. I always wonder about the concept of can you truly be charitable? And then I get into the whole thing about my thoughts about prayer.
Right.
And prayer being such a difficult thing to do, because in order to pray, what do? I pray for my Cadillac today, or, well, that doesn't seem right, but I pray to relieve me of this particular illness or pain today, me? Is that prayer? Or I pray to God so that I will be saved? Ego, be gone. And at what point can we offer actual prayer? And it's an act like this posting where it actually occurs. So when you read the flowery books about being of service to other, you go, oh yeah, I like that a lot. Well, this is the doing of service to others.
Because we also call this the way of service.
We are on the way of
service. We're embarked on the way of service here. So, interestingly enough, David, let me make my comment.
Please.
You're going to read those, right?
I'm going to read these in just
a
minute.
There's hopefully, as I said, I'd like to read everybody's post in this regard, and I'm going to make a post also. And actually, what I'm probably going to post, I haven't entirely decided yet, but I'm really struck this on this reading of the Joy of Sacrifice, going back and reminding myself of it, I'm really struck by this whole section on ethics. There's a long section in the beginning called ethics.
Yeah.
And I just think that this is so
relevant.
Well, I just think what I just want to say is it's so geared. The ethics, to me, are completely geared to this In Search of the Ordinary. It's what, it's like
nice.
the we put together 5 or 6 Talk of the Months in a little booklet called Work Conditions, the Conditions of a Work Community. It's like this is the nitty-gritty. Like it isn't about, you know, the issues that are addressed in the human biological machine or even practical work on self. It's about things like hospitality and sleep. Here's so I wanted to read, here's this great passage here just a short one. Hospitality is the greatest law given to man. If he knew how to obey this one law, he could overcome his imperfections. I mean, this is, to me, this is an extremely profound statement. And all of what's in this section on hospitality, I think, are so, the things are so, what do you call it, geared to the everyday is what I'm thinking of. It's like this is, you know, it's a part of the teaching that EJ is presenting here, which is like, this is a whole lot of what's got, you know, of what's changed. In modern society, we've lost all this kind of thing, which is completely natural to maybe, you know, society 2,000 years ago, or tribal, you know, or nomadic tribal societies or whatever. And this is, but these ideas or these principles of hospitality in regard to being of service, you know, being in the way of service, these things are completely foundational to me. And then let me just read, there's one more that really, this is startling to me when I went back and looked at it again, but I think this is just utterly marvelous. Page 142, at the very end of ethics, there's this set of four statements which constitute the ethics of sleep. And it says, sleep is regenerative. Guilt should not be associated with it. Prolonged sleep is not the custom of the wise. One should not lie down to sleep while in the company of people who are seated. And that's, you know, if that sounds silly to you, this is like, I was actually told this explicitly in regard to being at a talk, I think, when I was first visiting the Institute. Yeah, doesn't matter if you've been up all day, all night, or whatever. If you're at the table, if you're at, in an invocational space, you don't lie down while other people are seated at the table. And then finally, this is the one that knocks me out. This is the last statement in the ethics. Sleep is intended to provide energy for work in sanctuary. Yeah, how simple is that? Sleep, this is like physical sleep, horizontal sleep, I believe.
Yeah.
Although you could think of it as, you know, it's also, it brings to mind to me that, that EJ states in the, I believe it's in the Human Biological Machine, that it's pathological to want to be awake in the waking state all of the time. And this is, you know, the hallmark of this could be one of these enlightened individuals who needs to be fed all the time and so on, you know, although that is, does come in one of the sacrifices. But, you know, it's basically, he says it's only, it's more efficient to go in and out of the waking state to be able to voluntarily
transit
that,
back and forth.
To transit, yeah. Well, to voluntarize it is the one of the goals, let's say, of a lot of exercises. But here, I'll just repeat again. Sleep is intended to provide energy for work in sanctuary. So what strikes me about that is like is to say, this is like, to me, this is the this is like the ultimate measure. It's sort of like the ultimate.
Yeah.
What could you say? It's to be able to think. Say you get up in the morning to be able to feel refreshed and regenerated and so on. This is good. You know, you're healthy. It's a matter of ordinary life. You're just healthy and you've slept and whatever, and now you're ready for the work of the day. But the idea that you've co-opted, you've absorbed, you've sucked up actually sleep, even say the sleep of the machine, you have co-opted it into this work of yours because you realize this is the ethics of sleep. You need a sleep, you've got to regenerate, your body needs sleep, and the reason for it, if you dedicate, when you get up after sleeping, now you're dedicated to your work, I'm thinking this is a very high point of development. I think this is a goal, this would be a real achievement for me when I got up in the morning to say, oh, now I'm feeling healthy, I'm regenerated, and I'm going to do this objective prayer work or this, you know, work for
service
to others.
Dedicating your work to entry into the sanctuary.
Yeah, but it's like saying that you're in the off time as well. Okay, you've got to have some recreation, you've got to rest, you've got to rest the machine, you've got to have sleep, but this is all part of the process. It's part of what you're doing with your life. So anyway.
So I'm going to read...
That's all I'm going to say about that.
I'm going to read some of the posts that were up there when I came for the class. So they weren't all up there. I'm not sure if others have posted. But, and I'm just going to read parts of it, and then we'll open it up to conversation, and we love to get feedback on stuff. Okay? So,
sure.
First, and the winner of this year's door prize is Aria, and she says, and the question is, what are the sacrifices that were of most significance to you? And for her, three, the sacrifice of habits. This sacrifice made much more sense the first time I read it for the class and the three times I read it before the class. But now, as I reread the book to find out what stood out the most, meant the most to me, I find I am reading and rereading and rereading it, and I'm fascinated by it. And finding myself trying to delve deeper into it yet again and again. I am not sure what it is that calls me back to this sacrifice, but it holds me captivated in a sense of wonderment. Then, she says, sacrifice five, the sacrifice of tendencies. This one touched me very deeply, still does, and is something I am still struggling with. While I feel and see each of the sacrifices in me at various levels, I seem to keep returning to this one, too. In particular, the need to stay awake no matter what it takes. And I think it truly does take a community of friends to stay awake through some transitions and spaces. Thank you, my friends. Then Harry comes forth. You'll want to read this one over and over again. Harry, the pivotal chapters for me were between the sacrifice of our place in the work, number 8, and the sacrifice of consciousness, number 10, aided by some choice comments from David, Ivan, George Baker, and Mark McGibbon that crystallized an insight that the sacrifices are not so much what we actively give up, but are what naturally fall away as we move our place of residence from the biological machine to the essential self, drawn by the lure of the joyful life we've been seeking for a very long time. Like moving from one house to another, at first we stay in one place while we move our belongings to the other. Lots of things go to Goodwill or the Salvation Army. Some are kept and put in the new place, and still others are thrown away. Then at some point we realize that when we finish the day's work, we will be staying at the new house, even if a few items, or perhaps a lot, remain to be moved tomorrow. That realization came to me sometime during these three chapters and has grown steadily more stable ever since. And then, he concludes, perhaps the most striking experience has been that I have grown to sense our group as a living creature and with people I have never met, whom I would not recognize maybe at the grocery store, and whom I know only by their avatar name and their vibe profile, most notable when they are missing for an evening. This has been a real stretch of my map of reality, and my only misgiving is that I may never have the pleasure of meeting everyone in person. My thanks to you all for a great class. Susan, for me, the sacrifice that provided the most work was this number 6. Sacrifice of control, life of passivity. As the sacrifice approached, I had been dealing with back pain for several months. Right as this sacrifice started, I was at my job and my back completely froze. I was unable to carry on for one more step. I realized before I had even left the building that I would not ever be returning to this job. Over the next days and doctor tests, I was found that not only did I have a fractured back, but that I had had stage 4 breast cancer, metastasized to the bone. Due to pain, I was barely able to move much. I was using a cane, unable to sleep, and reliant on others. The lessons that I had to learn were to be calm. Not much of what I lost control of really meant anything. Everything I was trying to hold together was just an outer noise, not things of the essence. One skill I acquired when losing control is courtesy, being appreciative. Please and thank you became huge when you are reliant on others. I also developed a skill of appreciation. As things fall away, you see what is left and what really has meaning. I appreciate the things falling away as it makes space for a new me to dance in. And I appreciate the small, quirky things that can never be controlled. It took me some time to realize that I had to give up control of others' reaction. I had to just watch the diverse responses to my cancer, from the overly helpful to the overly over-advice givers, the dreaded crinkled up, I'm so sorry cancer face, to the more rare, truly helpful, present people. Now I just watch and have fun making up new categories. The timing of the sacrifice helped me to realize that losing control was no different, because I really never had control anyway. It sure makes a dreadful experience more bearable and sometimes entertaining when you are not so busy trying to control yourself, your emotions, and your moods, and more impossibly others. I learned to watch all of this more like watching the Weather Channel or a TV show, a much higher place to be than down trying to fix everything. Thank you, Susan. And the last one I was able to print out before I came was from Simon. I think every sacrifice is a silver bullet jewel in itself for the beast, particularly my journey through the book with Ivan, David, and all the invaluable companions gives me a deeply appreciative new perspective in the meaning of suffering. Suffering in this case as used daily as by the HBM. At this end, for me, suffering has transmuted into intention in sacrifice, something purposeful, which is, to say the least, liberating, which in a way I guess I've arrived to experience the meaning of the book's title, I guess. It has added more meaning as well to the HBM chapter, Help, and a more transcendent vision of our difficulties as humans. The man on the cross has many companions to share his meals, but few to share his abstinence. Many admire his miracles, but few follow in the ignominy of his cross. Those are four individuals that gave of themselves in a great way to help show us and teach us the depth that they got out of those particular sacrifices. That's how we can help one another. Okay?
Let's see if there are comments, discussion online. Or
Simon, anything that we need to read at the moment? Ooh, that was a lot. Those are really good.
Okay, let's see. Agnidi Daya says, New Age work is for lower mind and emotions. This work is not.
Yes.
We got a few number of thanks for the comments that were shared in the Wings of Chaos from Silverdale and Molly Midways and Aurea as well, that has been very helpful for her, for Aurea in these times of dire need. Pianjo says, Ivan's comments reminds me of what David Reisman said. You don't have to teach ethics if you first teach simple courtesy.
Good comment.
Yeah, the whole vitality. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what struck me exactly about some of those passages in the ethics. It's like, yeah, you don't have to read books and sit around and study if you just learned hospitality.
And that's it. All the other comments are just appreciative and thankful of the comments and how useful it has been. Which, in the case I say, I put my name there, but I get to the liberty. I think whatever insight I got is the reflection of the group. So whatever I post, it's in the name of everybody's names there.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that, Simon. And I encourage everybody to have the experience of speaking up to that effort of writing down something. You're going to say, oh, well, there was nothing it was all really good, blah, blah, you know. That's fine. But I have a link to the list of the sacrifices there. Just thumb through them in a sense and just see, does one go like this? Does one like catch your breath all of a sudden? And if it does, look at that one, read that one again, and write something down. Because others are going to come behind us, and they'll read this, and they'll have a clue. Okay? Two things I want to point out. One is the space that we're in now. Is this a different room than we walked into 40 minutes ago, Ivan?
Could be.
It's a different room. We're in a different space entirely. And that space was created by the joint attention that we're blending together here to form what I call to form group. That Harry talked to us about in his posting. This is where the work is at, is Voyagers working together and coming together as they can. And then when we get into this level of space, can you still move? Can you still work, act, and interact in hospitality, courtesy, as any of the sacrifices are, can you still do that? That's the work in the bardos that is before us. Note it. Note it well. And then later, recall it. That's the mechanism of voyaging, but you note it from your sensing mechanism, you can get back to it at that point. It's a form of navigation when you're to use a form of mood, but you have to allow the mood, which means you have to be open. When you're open, the other side is, of course, you're vulnerable at that time. And it's in the vulnerability and the courage to go forth in those moments that we find what we're supposed to find. Some of us can do it willingly, and others, it has been put upon us. Okay?
we there? Are we there yet? Well, another saying that's circulated, you know, around this community, around this school, is that this is a teaching that comes to life in the transmission. It's a teaching that's alive when it's given from one hand to another, from one, you know, from one essential self to another being, to a prospective student or whatever. And, you know, that's, I come back to that very often, because this experience here that David's referring to, and that you know, that Pianjo, that Harry referred to, of a circle, you know, our discussion group, our study circle here, is, you know, it's the way that the teaching comes alive. It's where, because we're bringing it out. We're sitting together in a circle. You know,
we're invoking it.
Yeah, we're bringing down, you know, more of this teaching for ourselves, but it's also something we're doing for each other. But the thing is that this is why, you know, when EJ is always proposing projects like entrepreneurship of various kinds, you know, like when these people are working with this matrix, with the coin, with penny collections and coin collections and so on, and then he reached a certain point where he proposed that he would create these Atlantis coinages, right, like gold coins struck from, you know, with the symbols of Atlantis. They were Atlantean coins. And they would be, you know, for the goddess Molly Midway, or for the god, you know, David Franco or Ivan Lurie or whatever, you know, related to Atlanta. But then, see, the idea was you take this, demonstrate, go out to businessmen in your community, go out and just find people in your town, and show them these examples of gold coinage, and say, we could do this for you, for your business. You could have the Atlantean coinage, you know, of the sparkle bright cleaners, you know, on Main Street or whatever. And the thing is, so what is he, you know, what kind of cockamamie, what kind of crazy stuff is this, you know, cockamamie stuff is it that EJ's proposing? Well, he's actually, he's sort of like almost nonstop, it generates ideas for how you can go out and somehow encounter strangers and meet strangers. And it's like more or less consciously, the idea is that you're having an opportunity to bring this teaching to life, because this is a teaching that comes alive in the transmission. So if I have some project that comes from this school and I go out and take it to the Sparkle Bright cleaners on Main Street in my town, that's, you know, even though it may be cloaked, it may be all in metaphorical terms or whatever you want to call it, it's all by analogy, or let's say, or by association, or, you know, but you're dealing with artifacts. You know, David has talked about the jewelry, jewels of ancient lands that come from this school. And there's, you know, instances of theater. The creation story verbatim play was taken by Robert and Kelly and a group of support staff, and they actually performed it in 3 or 4 locations in Los Angeles. And all of that is a way of bringing it to the community, bringing it to the public, I mean, to strangers. And this is, you know, it's opportunities to have that teaching come alive. So,
And let me speak briefly about the idea of invocation.
Yeah.
When we read we open up the crusty books of the alchemists from the 14th, 15th, and 16th centuries, and we read their dialogue of John Dee or whoever it is, and we go, oh my God, this really complex stuff, if I could just do it, this invocation of the blah, 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 whatever would happen. That's what we're doing right now. We are doing that alchemical work. We are invoking the space that they are talking about. We have myths about it that block our recognition of what's happening right in front of us. We are creating something together. Everybody online, with Ivan, with Jana, we are creating that together. And we have created something that wasn't there a few minutes ago. And that is a mark that will be left. That is the mystery of all of this, is doing this with this kind of intention internally and doing it together.
If I may say something, David?
Simon.
Yeah, well, it's regarding to that, I think so many times, you know, of the difficult, how difficult it is, you know, as you two guys and Molly and Marvette, you know, expose yourself right there in the camera. Let aside to have the attitude to say, you know, let's do it, okay? Let's put ourselves on the spot and guide that, which is it's an accomplishment by itself, right? And still you have to carry on with that, how delicate it is to carry on and guide, as you said, as preachers, you know, and through this journey of these books that we've been doing. But not only you have done it, but has been amazingly all of you eloquent, and there is a lot of compassion in your words. And, you know, to understand which one of us is coming from, and, you know, it was incredibly well done. And I'm from deeply
when
thankful
I,
to all of you guys.
Thank you so much, Simon. Thank you for that. But I am reminded, when I do my work as a CPA consultant, when I come to a client, I always ask them let's say someone's starting a business, not someone who's more advanced, but the principles are the same. I say, what is it you love to do? What do you love to do? And only when they find that can they understand and create their business. And only from there can you flow the mechanics of a business plan, funding organization, stuff like that. It has to start from that spark. This is what I love to do. I love to have the forum to be able to express this form of the work. This is the cleanest form of work that I've been able to find for myself. Okay? And because of that, and I'm thankful for you coming because it allows me to do what I love. So there you go.
All right. Are you saying that this, having this invocational circle or study circle, is for you like what those businesses are?
Absolutely,
for them?
It is.
Because it's what they love, and then they have a business based on it.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's how writing is for me. I feel like I'm.
See.
I'm going through a transition. Actually, I feel like I'm a householder in this community, but I'm going through a transitional phase where, you know, if I can concentrate my energies onto where I really have developed specialized skills, which I think is in channeling certain, you know, energies creatively, like doing creative work. I think that you know, then I can be really fulfilling my obligation here. You know, it's like the householder part is irrelevant. It's the work part that's relevant. Anyway.
I wanted to, I didn't want to leave Spinoza out of our last class.
Oh, no, not Spinoza again.
So I started to bring to out of memory to say a quote and a few weeks ago. But this is the very opening, well, I won't give a big background on Spinoza, but,
okay.
But just right. When he was, of course, we know his life story, and he was literally on his own in a strange land, and then rejected by his own people, the Jews, he was excommunicated. And it's obvious now that his life work was to write this book called The Ethics, which has a very different meaning than behavioral science. But when he was, his first attempt at it was more fluid, and he found a methodology later. But his first work was called On the Improvement of the Understanding. And this is the first paragraph from that book. Okay? So, after experience had taught me that all the usual surroundings of social life are vain and futile, seeing that none of the objects of my fears contain in themselves anything either good or bad, except insofar as the mind is affected by them, I finally resolved to inquire whether there might be some real good having power to communicate itself which would affect the mind singly, to the exclusion of all else, whether in fact there might be anything of which the discovery and attainment would enable me to enjoy continuous, supreme, and unending happiness. That's where we started.
Well, there's ambition for you.
I think you found it. So, wow. That was about it, Ivan. We're almost at the end. What are we going to do next?
Take a deep breath.
Take a deep breath.
We're going to move on to the next course of
now, I've done,
study and discussion.
I did practical work on self. Then I did HBM to give us the background for practical work on self. I had done HBM previously, too. And then and we did practical work on self with Teresa Dietze, who found it independently. Then we did HBM to give the background. Then I decided that I'd like to do the joy of sacrifice to give us the background internally for our next book. The next book we're going to do is called Life in the Labyrinth. In Life in the Labyrinth, we launch our ship off from the shore of common knowledge, and we're going to paddle out into unknown waters. Like Carrie says, we're moving into a new home, a new house. Not everything will come with us. So we'll have to learn the skills of navigating into that new land. And Susan told us part of that is when she's with somebody that's present in themselves. And as Arya says, with a sense of, she's left with a sense of wonderment. It doesn't mean that it's simple, joyful, happy, and in some cases it will be fearful. It's frightening to leave the shore of where we were. But I invite you to join us in that voyage as well, the totally different land than we've been at in the last couple of years here in my presentations. We will take about a month off. We'll start back toward the latter part of January. I'm not sure when. And we'll see where that one goes. I'm not quite sure what form that's going to take. It might just be what I call a slow reading project, which means it's not going to be like 1 week, one chapter, 1 week, one chapter.
Not Life in the Labyrinth, I don't think so.
You just can't do it like that. We'll take our time. So if you need a copy of the book, call up or send an email, and Ivan will try to get some copies together.
Reminding me, we still haven't got a new printing in effect.
Well, just your necessity will help drive us on that one. So, Simon, any other closing comments?
Yeah, what about comments from off the air here?
Let's see. No, I mean, there is a comment here regarding our the new book. It says, Piangio says, in Life in the Labyrinth, we leave the island of the Tonal to enter the Sea of the Nahual, hopefully to return. And
and we might not. Is a
no
true
assurances.
Statement.
No assurance.
That is a very true statement. And that's at the heart of sometimes why I've been hesitant to go into that book, because it's actually not a simple thing to go where that book points us, actually, and then to come back, to reassemble the HBM in a sense.
Could we ask, just to tag on here, could we ask Harry Piangio to give us a comment on the work that you're doing there with your other group with Life in the Labyrinth?
He's not on the phone.
I know he's not on the phone, but he could write it for us.
Okay.
Yeah, he's there.
Okay, good.
Yeah, because I know
well,
we're,
he's
out,
putting
we're
that
about
together.
Out of time. But,
well, he's putting that together. Do you want to write? Is there anything else you want to read for us, Simon?
Hawk Lady is asking if we are going to stay at Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Yes,
she hopes.
Thank you, Hawk Lady.
And people are sad that we are ending, but we should, don't be, please, be looking forward, man, to get together again with excitement, because this has been great.
Take the time to start reading the book, Life in the Labyrinth. It's not a simple read. It's not that simple. But and absorb it. Take the time to absorb it a little bit, and that'll be helpful for you. Okay? Yes, that'll be 7 o'clock Wednesdays. I've got that kind of blocked out for the rest of the next year. So we'll see what happens after
next
that.
Next year, yeah, right. Very likely.
I might take a Wednesday or two off, maybe. So I think we're just about there. And Simon, thank you for you helping us so much this year on with this sacrifice. It's been great, and your comments have always been very useful for us. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. No, no, not at all. Thanks.
So is that it, Molly? Can someone send me the log, too? Oh,
I copied it today. I'll copy it today. Sorry, I missed that last one, but I'll copy it today.
That's good. I'd be
okay.
Happy to.
That sounds good.
I'm happy to hear from everybody. So thank you for coming this evening, and thanks for journeying us through this, The Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold, and we'll take it up in a month or so with a brand new book.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right?
Thanks David and Ivan.
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay. You be well. Have a good day.
Travel well.